Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to UN Federal Radio. Today is Monday, the 31st. Well, we're already at the end of the month. January the 31st, and today is the Militia Monday show. Tonight, our guest is Jimmy Wynn from the Militia of Georgia, and we're going to be discussing a whole bunch of different things about the militia today. Hopefully, we're going to be getting rid of some misconceptions out there about what the militia is and who it is and what it's all about, as well as many other things. And we're going to start having some of those real discussions that we need to start having about the militia, our purpose, our role, and what we need to be doing right now, problems we're having and what we seem to be doing about them and what hasn't worked in the past, and maybe what will work in the future. We'll try and see if we can't get some ideas going. So welcome to the show, Jimmy. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Everybody, before we get started, sorry about this, Jimmy, before we get started, about the show, if you're having problems with the show, you won't be hearing this then, but if you would like to join our mailing list, please email me at randymack@uftronomy.com and put subscribe me in the email or in the subject line. And I'll email you up then about the upcoming shows we're having, who's going to be on, all that good stuff. I don't send out a bunch of, and I never send out mass forwards and crap like that. I don't do that. You're not going to get bugged by me. I just send out information about the shows. We've got a new show format now. Like I said, we've got a new show format coming up, so we're going to be doing things a lot differently now. I'm not going to be bringing on a lot of the, some of the types of guests I guess I was actually bringing on in the past. Really working through my guests now, trying to bring up people that might not agree with everything they have to say. In fact, we might disagree on many things, but we agree on things, and I feel that they have enough understanding of the problems we have as well as the Constitution and our history that they are of great benefit to getting their information out. Whether you agree with some of their viewpoints or stances, that's up to you. We're all big boys here and girls. You don't like it? Hey, come back and debate. Counter what they have to say, and let's find out which is factual and which is not. Who knows, you get some of the best ideas in the world that way. But we can't do that until we start having these discussions. So, Jimmy, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm actually having a pretty good day. I've been excited about this show. I know I've tried to get you on a couple times, but technology snafus and lost emails just seem to have not let it happen. So I'm really glad that you were able to we have you on tonight.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Listen, before we get started, Al, why don't you tell a little bit about who you are, a little bit about the militia of Georgia, and we've got a whole bunch to talk about, so I've got a bunch of questions, and we'll just get into it from there.
Well, the militia of Georgia was started back in 1987. Previous to that, we had had some civil rights marches through here. And I was involved in that quite heavily, but I was always working in a different direction. And I got kind of plugged into people who were survivalists and constitutionalists, and I'd already had quite a bit of experience. So in 1987, we just started meeting, and we decided that we'd just call ourselves the militia. We didn't really have a name of an organization or anything. And from there, we went to all across the state of Georgia meeting with other groups of people, and it took us several years, but we finally decided we were going to hold an election, and they fielded a slate of candidates, and I was one of the guys that got picked. I wound up on the top of that heap, and every couple of years we hold an election, and we've been going, like I said, since 1987.
Okay.
And basically, we are constitutionalists first. The primary focus is that we're going to do everything that we can from a legal and political perspective, using up all of our nonviolent avenues of redress. If those fail, then we would consider extraordinary action. But it means that we're citizens first, and then soldiers second.
Well, that's the way we were supposed to have been. I mean, we were supposed to be citizens who were defending our country and our freedom and our land, so. Tell me a little bit about the militia of Georgia. What is Militia of Georgia about? A little bit about its history, when you guys started, things like that. Just so we can, you know, a little background on who you guys are.
Well, we got started in 1987. We were basically a constitutionalist group. We had a lot of major issues that we worked on throughout the 80s. And even before that, I'd gotten my feet wet in patriot kind of stuff. I was involved in an armed standoff here in Georgia that involved a black farmer by the name of Oscar Lorick. The sheriff was trying to auction his property off, run and pay taxes. They didn't want to give him a few days to collect enough money to pay his taxes, and they tried to auction it off, and we stepped in and stopped that. Some rich benefactor came along and cut a deal to pay the man's taxes and penalties and let us leave without further incident. So, you know, I pretty much had a little bit of experience like that going in. And then from there, we fought political issues, getting the Social Security number off a driver's license. We fought national ID. We fought the income tax. And I was involved in the research in a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the guy won it. Very narrow ground, but, you know, still he won the thing. And then it has times have gotten a little more hairy, gone on to study things like, I don't know if you ever heard of a program called Spike before.
No, I haven't heard of Spike. What is that? Not off the top of my head, anyways.
It's a program that was started back in the 80s by Lieutenant Colonel Bo Kreitz. He was the most decorated soldier during the Vietnam era. You know, he was a former Green Beret and a CIA operative.
Yes, so I remember now.
He developed a program, and it's called Spike, which is specially prepared individuals for key events. And we went through the training, and he said, now everybody that's gone through this, I want you to go out and teach this to other people. And it was basically the skills that he said that he taught to Delta Forces and the Navy SEALs, Rangers, and so forth. So that's our premier program that we teach.
Okay.
We also have an online program that's more geared to home study for people that really don't know anything about the militia. And you read the stuff online, you contact us, take a test, and then you move to the next level and so forth. And there's 12 levels of it. When you get to the end, we issue a diploma, and we turn out people that know probably 90% more than anyone else that's in the conservative movement.
Well, this is good to hear then. Well, it seems like you guys have put a lot of work into it, a lot of thought into it, and really have moved beyond. I mean, I know right now there's so many militia out there that are trying to form up, trying to get started, and they have no backbone, no focus, no direction. They say we're militia, they train, but I mean, how many of them are actually, I've talked to a lot that don't really even have, people that have it that should even, you know, they have people that are even what I would call qualified trainers. You know, a lot of the things that we hear out there and that we think that we know about the Constitution or history, the things that we say online and we discuss on, you know, discuss amongst each other, I find so much of it is either, you know, untrue or misunderstood. You know, I think a lot of it comes from lack of reading. You know, YouTube is good for a lot of things, right? You can learn a lot of stuff on YouTube, but at the same time, man, it's, we've forgotten how to read. And you know, it seems that we really,
well, there's so much
as if we're infants,
on
or
the internet.
Yeah, as if we're infants, and you know, and we're like infants compared to how the adult population was supposed to be, you know, back in the 1700s, 1800s. You know, as far as what we know and what we understand. Let's get into that first off. You know, there was a discussion on RAM the other day. And you had brought up a point about the militia. And part of that conversation, or part of your statement was about the misconception of what militia is and is not. You know, you had brought up that, you know, just because you get a group of 5, 6, 7, 10, hell, even 100 guys together. That doesn't make you militia.
I have this conversation with a lot of people, and they have a difference of opinion. But first off, if you're going to be militia, if you go back and you read what the Founding Fathers said, militia's answer to the state militia answers to the governor of a state. And in this case, you have a government that doesn't even want to acknowledge the existence of the militia. Well, our forefathers provided for that too. I think it's in, if I'm not mistaken, it's in Federalist Paper number 2, I think, off the top of my head. They say that, you know, we act through elected representatives, but that the militia can also act through, people who are elected within their ranks if they, you know, if they have to. So if your legislative, avenues of redress aren't there, you can have officers that are chosen from the people who are participating in the militia. And there's a big difference of opinion here in Georgia, and I'll tell you what our difference is. Before this militia ever called itself the militia of Georgia, we went everywhere we could think of. We tried to get everybody within this state that cared about their country to participate.
Okay.
And our leadership was chosen from that. Well, the competitors, and we have several competitors in Georgia, and some of them try to usurp our name or some name close enough to it that confuses people and they don't know what they're getting into. But they'll have some guy that, you know, he'll decide, well, I'll just leave and I'll set my own militia up and I'll call myself the lieutenant colonel or the major or the general, and he starts charging people, dude, slaps up the website, and they call themselves militia. And the only, they say they're going out to train. Well, there's, from my perspective, there's a lot of things wrong with that. First is that they didn't have an election that was open where everybody could participate in it. They designed them specifically where all these people that do that, they design them specifically where they have a quick group. And that's what forms the first nucleus of their group. It's not representative of the whole population. And then they say, well, we're going out here to train. Well, what are you going to train for? They're mostly paramilitary groups, and they don't have any constitutional idea of what it is they're trying to accomplish and no legal experience. And to top it off, if they have veterans, unfortunately, they get a lot of people that are, you know, they're outdated technologically. Things have changed a lot since the first time that the United States went to Iraq, or going back as far back as Vietnam. The, you know, the technology's changed. The rules of engagement have changed. A lot of stuff is different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a question for you. You know, you brought up a point. We had had a discussion before, and you had told me this story. Well, let's remember this. You had brought up the fact that, you know, you when you were first starting, you had gotten around and tried to get as much support and as many people active as you could in the militia. Now, you had told me a story once about a letter that you had sent to the governor announcing your formation and requesting recognition from the state. Now, Through lack of response on his part, you're basically lawfully recognized by the state of militia, or by the state of Georgia now, are you not? Or am I mistaken there?
Well, they don't challenge our right to exist, and the reason that I say that, they have an anti-militia statute, and we were as public as we could be about what it is that we were attempting to accomplish, and I just put them on notice, you know, that, hey, we're going to do this. If you object, you need to let us know in writing that we're going to select temporary officers that, you know, that they kind of guide it. And I'll tell you, going in, they say, I'm the commanding officer. I told you, I'm elected every 2 years. I don't really look at that as a rank. It's an elected position for the administration of the militia in its, you know, in its current stage. the governor could step in and win anybody who wanted to be over it. But they took no action, so we just, you know, we kept saying, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, then we're just going to consider, like in every other legal action, if no one has an objection to it, then it's legitimate. And for years, the media would say we were the only militia that they considered to be the legitimate one in the state. Hasn't challenged us. There's been times where people have done things that were, you know, they were borderline illegal, if not illegal. And I'll give you a little story here about one. We had a temporarily appointed captain, and he got some people from ROTC to go to a field training exercise. They don't tell me what's going on, which was against our rules, but, you know, nonetheless, he did it. He organized this thing. He used people out of ROTC. And a couple days later, I get a knock on my door from some mean-looking brass, and they're telling me, you know, what this guy done was illegal. What did I, you know, what was I thinking? And they told me all about a little Army regulation called 600-20, which is an anti-fraternization rule. So we're well aware that we can exist, but if you're in the organized military or you're in the ROTC or something like that, you can't take part in our field training exercises.
Well, this is true, and in fact, the Constitution itself and most state constitutions go into detail about who is militia, and then it gives exceptions for those who cannot be in the militia due to the importance of their duties and their positions. Postmen, for instance, active military, things like that. There were some people that were excluded from militia duty. Now, I've got a question for you, and it was basically a question from the chat room. He was unclear whether what you were saying is that basically, if people form a militia, or in Georgia anyways, that basically if you're not the militia of Georgia, you're a paramilitary organization if you don't submit to the governor. Now, we've had this discussion before, and here's my contention, is that throughout our history, not just the U.S. history, but our history as Britons when we first came here, since Magna Carta, the military and the militia had always must have been subordinate to a civil authority. They could not be subordinate only unto themselves, basically making them outside the rule of law, the control of the people. You know, private armies, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in historical times, that civil authority was many with different organizations or groups of people, whatever, but there was always a civil authority. In our history, in the U.S. history, that civil authority, when the governors wouldn't acknowledge or recognize the militia, or the government was acting outside of its purview, if you will, the committees of safety became that civil authority that the militia subordinated to. And we can see that most readily with George Washington, in fact. When he was a member of the committees of safety, he was sent as a delegate to the National Committee of Safety Gathering, which was called the Continental Congress. He was elected to be, he was commissioned by them to be the general of the militia, at which point he resigned his subscription with the Continental Congress because he couldn't be both. Conflict of interest. He became general of the militia, and then he immediately subordinated that army, that militia, to the Continental Congress. Commissions were given out. Commissions for officers were then given out. Usually whoever the militias presented as commissioned, you know, for their commissions, they usually accepted unless there was problems or whatever. They revoked commissions, things like that. Are you pretty much in agreement with that, or did you have a different idea there?
No, we're pretty much in agreement with it. The way that the militia of Georgia is organized is that, let's say that you just decide you want to have a unit. Units are anywhere from 3 people to any number you want, but I don't recommend people go over 12. If you get over 12 people, it becomes bulky and you can't handle it. Each one of those units, they pick who they want to network with. But each one of them also has a representative that they send in, and they're the ones that help make the policy. They serve kind of like a legislature, if you would. And rules and regulations and things that govern us is what they come up with. So it's not a unilateral decision. I don't make unilateral decisions. If, you know, I can go in and I could fight, let's say I could fight a case about the Second Amendment, and the government did not want to honor the Second Amendment, and they come in to take our guns. I don't tell the militia, well, let's rebel. I have to go to this rules committee that's made up of all these guys. They're all responsible. Sometimes you have to beat them to death to get them to participate to keep me from having the burden of making unilateral decisions. But it's their job that each unit supplies us with a representative to make a representative vote across the board. You know, when we're out of options, then every unit makes that decision. What is the next step?
Okay. No, that's, before we go on anymore, let me just announce this out there. For those in the chat room and for those who are listening in other places, if you have questions, if you have any questions if you have any disagreements or if you would like clarification on anything he said, the chat room is kind of busy. There's a lot of conversation going on in there, so I'm not really able to keep up with it. But if you want, you can call in. Put your name in. If you have Skype, unfortunately our 800 line isn't set up yet. I haven't gotten it interacting with the rest of our system. But if you have Skype, you can call in and pose your questions, your comments, your disagreements even. Put your Skype name into the chat room, and we will bring you into the call. So if you have any questions, you have any comments or anything, put your Skype name in the chat room. You can find that at uftreadonme.com. And we'll bring you on, and you can ask your questions, pose your comments, or present your disagreement and your validation for it. You come with your argument, so come. Don't just bring a good debate with you. Is what I'm saying. Come prepared. If you're going to debate, come prepared with a good debate. We keep our debate civil here. No name calling. I don't care how heated it gets, but there will be no name calling. We will remain civil. We will remain gentlemen. An armed society is meant to be a polite society, so keep that in mind. Let's start acting like adults. I got a question for you now. This is one of the problems that I see that with the militia right off the bat. Right now, we've got a lot of people out there that are militia, and I have this discussion with so many people. There's one there. So those who do recognize the fact that there has to be a civil authority, there's no civil authority they can turn to. Two, those that don't even understand that, they claim that they don't need a civil authority, that the militia is sole and sovereign unto itself, and they can prescribe their own generals. You know, you could 50 guys and you're a brigadier general in some cases. What do you see about, how do you feel about this situation? What are your ideas on it?
Well, there's a word that starts out with cluster, and if you've been in the military, you know what the rest of it is, but I would say that's what it is. It doesn't work. We've been through it here in Georgia for quite some time in recent years. You have all these self-appointed people, and everyone's going off in a different direction. You can't hold yourself out to the public as being their defenders when you have one guy who's there one day, and he tells you something. He says, I'm the leader of the militia, and this is what I think. And the very next day, another guy come along and contradict everything he just said. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't see how it's even feasible. I tell people that you have a right to keep and bear arms as an individual. And you are a part of the militia, but two or three guys or 10 or 15 or whatever with guns don't necessarily make up a militia. You have to have an overall representation so that everybody in that state that's qualified to vote can partake of it. If they're qualified to be in the militia and they're qualified to vote, then, you know, they should be a part of the decision-making process. And when you have these little petty dictators that set themselves up as being a quote-unquote militia leader, I don't see how it fits the constitutional standard. I think that's a select militia, in my opinion.
I agree as well. I mean, well, you know, we look back through, and if you look back through history, you'll see just thousands and thousands of examples of what happens when the military or militia doesn't subordinate to the civil authority. I mean, if we look back in ancient Rome, let's look at basically the civil war that broke out when Senna and Sulla had been forming their own armies that did not answer to the people. There was constant civil war, which was brought about when Gaius Marcus changed the requirements for getting into the legion. He basically took it away from the citizens and opened it up to everybody, who basically then were in it for profit and booty and were loyal only to their commanders. And that created, well, that was the start of the downfall of Rome, of the Roman Republic. After that came the Roman Emperor. In France, during their revolution, they said that they were fighting for freedom for all, but at the end of it, there was no civil authority, and he, with the biggest army, then tried to fill the void of power. And the heads continued to keep rolling and rolling and rolling, and they didn't stop. You know, this is the reason for that civil authority.
You see the same thing happening today.
I do see it today. I mean, look around the world. It's not just anywhere today. I mean, you know, current history. Look at the Bolshevik revolutions. Look at the, socialism starts off that way. You know, it says that it's the power of the people, but then all of a sudden it's the power of the government. And the army is no longer subordinate to the people, but to the government. Look at South America. I mean, all of those. Look at Cuba. They all started the same way. A revolution with no civil authority, with the military or the militia having no civil authority to the people, but only to a commander.
Well, I think at a small scale, that's what's going on in this country right now, but it's getting more prevalent.
All right, hang on one second. I've got somebody wanting to come in. Let me add him into the thing real quick. One second. All right, Captain Bully, we're going to bring you on here in a minute. If I missed your name or if you want to come in, just go ahead and type your Skype name in if I missed it, and we'll bring you on as well. So give us a minute and we'll get you going there. We'll bring you on here in a second, Captain. So I've got a question for you then. What can we do about the situation then? We have no civil authority other than our governor. And, you've gone through an experience that as well. The governors out there aren't recognizing the militia. Those people who are trying to run for office that are espousing the lawful militia, they don't seem to get elected. So what do we do about our civil authority?
Right now, that the militia is open to all the people who are qualified to be in the militia in that state, and their officers are freely chosen by the people, that sort of thing. If they have a militia that's like that and they want to network with us, then we'll call it, you know, we'll just say, well, you're part of the U.S. militias. Again, we don't have, there's no authority that's over that, but at least it gives you a framework so that some authority does exist, that we're all to the degree that we're all in agreement, and that the militia leaders can be the temporary civil authority until something is decided by by government. In this case, we don't even have a government. There's at least two governments. the United States right now. One is a de facto government, and the other is a de jure. The de facto government is an illegal government, and the de jure government is, is the lawful one. Now, a de facto government is what I term as being a federal legislative democracy that's owned and controlled by a few of the, big corporations. On the other hand, you have this republic that, where we're supposed to have elected leaders and everybody has constitutional rights and they're God-given rights. So the government can't come in and arbitrarily take them away from you, not even with a popularity vote. So we're at that stage where we're battling it, but the lawful government only exists in name right now.
Well, I've got a question for you then. What is to keep us from actually forming that civil authority ourselves? What do you think is our hindrance, or what do you think is keeping us from doing that? I mean, the committees of safety were always there for us to form. Unfortunately, they've been wiped out from our history books. So, I mean, I think we need to reteach the people about them and present them. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's what the Founding Fathers gave us. That was in their blueprint for us. What do you think about that?
I've been successfully for years to point out to people, these facts about the Magna Carta and the Declaration of Independence, where the people, said, okay, the government is now trampling on our rights. We've come to the end of what we can tolerate. And they had people from across the country who were representatives to sit down and draw out these lines in the sand, which became the Declaration of Independence. And they said, these are the things that we're going to pledge our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor in defense of. And we desperately need that because you have all these groups that say, from the Tea Party to the militias to conservative groups that say, we've had enough. Well, they've had enough, but they don't have a plan for anything in the future. They can't tell you of what they're going to accomplish or what they want to change. When they do get in power, they don't know what to do. You saw that recently with the Tea Party. The best thing they could come up with when they get to Washington is, we'll cut the military. That'll save us money. Now, from my perspective, if everybody had been sitting down and thinking about it, what would we do if we did get control of the government? Well, I've sat down and thought about it myself and thought, well, if we had representatives, here are ideas that I would do. I would get rid of things like the Federal Department of Education. How much money are you going to save there? If you got rid of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, transferred all these alcohol and tobacco cases to the DEA, and sent firearms cases to the FBI, and told the FBI to get rid of about 25% of those regulations, you start saving some big bucks. You don't need the Department of Homeland Security. The Environmental Protection Agency, that's probably another one. If they wanted to get serious, about what people could do, and to sit down and say, how would we make this a better government? But you run up against a brick wall trying to get people to sit down and say, this is what we're really tired of, so this is what we want to change. We just know we're paying more taxes and the government's telling us what to do more and more. We have a generic idea of what's wrong, but no specific idea.
So how do we correct this? What do we do? I mean, what are some options here for us? I've always thought, here's my idea. Tell me what you think about this. Please, be honest here. I mean, this is what we're trying to do here. We're trying to have these discussions that we just can't seem to have at places because, we're always worried about hurting people's feelings or offending people or whatever, but I think we need to be honest here. I'm looking for input. I'm looking for suggestions. And if my ideas are crap, please let me know. Here's what I think, though. I think that everybody out there keeps waiting for somebody else to step up to the plate. But nobody really wants to step up to the plate, except for a few people that have stepped up to the plate, Rap, Trap, and some other people. And, what they always seem to present, though, are these completely non-constitutional ideas that set up a few people in positions of lifelong leadership, you know, make them that lifelong unelected leader. Now we just had a recent elections, apparently, for a new president, and all 50 states are seated with new government and new governors. I guess they didn't read the Constitution and what a proper election is. So, you know, I guess we have a new government that started off unlawfully. We have a new, you know, a new lawful government that started off rather unlawfully. So I don't know. But my ideas are this. I think that maybe those thinkers amongst us out there, those people who can see the benefit of this, need to come together. I think maybe we need to come together and say, okay, look, here's what we need to do. We need to create a plan. We need an end goal. This is what we're trying to achieve. This is what it could possibly look like. A template, if you will. Take this idea out then to everybody, just like our founding fathers did, and present it to them and keep pushing it. And everybody pushes the same idea, the same plan. You know, a civil authority, the militia. And I think that if we do what these other people that claim to be lawful, who want to set up their little oligarchies, I think if we do what they, you know, what they're doing, because they're just going by the game plan that's always worked. They're unified. They're presenting one voice. One, you know, a plan and an option. But I think if we do it with a very lawful system, a very lawful template, I think maybe that's how we start. And then from there, you know, we start bringing in those other people that might not have been the thinkers, that were waiting for the thinkers to step forward, and then they can take it to their people, and then maybe we can get on the same page then and actually start making some progress. What are your ideas there?
I've kind of been working toward the same direction, which is why I wanted the you know, I thought the guys who were willing to start militias, for instance, had gotten to this point in their life where they tried everything else, so they want to try something new. And I thought several years ago that those would be the prime candidates that you would sit down with and say, okay, we're really tired. We've gotten to this point where we're willing to consider military solutions to our action, you know, to our problems. Where do we go from here? We have to let this government know here's the line in the sand, and the problem is finding the people to do it. But you're right, what we need are representatives from, you know, from different states that would sit down and hammer out something that addresses most of the issues that people would, you know, would be interested in and say they would get behind it and support it.
Well, you know, I know that there was a Continental Congress. I don't agree with the way that it was set up and established. I mean, it did not follow what our, you know, the lawful, you know, what the proper procedures according to how our founding fathers established the Continental Congresses. You know, but they came out with their Articles of Freedom or Freedom Articles, or I forgot even what they were called, but I know that they were very long. Our Constitution is only 4,000 words. And I saw that there was nothing but, I don't want to say nothing. I saw that there was a whole bunch of special interest in it. You know, and I think that's what we were, and the Constitution leaves no room for special interest groups or special interest politics. You know, I think that we need something like that, though, and I think that, you know, we keep looking for that civil authority, but I think it sits within our own militia. You know, I know that there are many people in our militia who are rather long in the tooth. You know, they can't hump that pack, you know, 10 miles, 20 miles, and then engage in an operation at the end of it. But they have the skills and experience, and they have that wisdom from age and, you know, from age and experience. I think that they could step into those roles of the committees of safety, you know, disengage from the militia, create those committees of safety. Nothing to say, you know, if they're the militia's trainers, there's nothing to say that a member of the COS cannot train the militia. In fact, we see that happen many times in the past, you know. But the problem is that, you know, all of our answers lie in our history, but we don't really seem to ever read our history. All of our answers lie there in our past history. If, you know, we're the only revolution that has ever worked. And we tried peacefully at first. We tried peacefully with the Olive Branch Petition. You know, and if you look at the UFTREDOME document that's on the website at UFTREDOME.com, you know, we put that out there as a template based upon that Olive Branch Petition. You know, as a template saying, look, here's what a solution could be. Here's what it can look like. You know, so far, It's hard getting those thinkers to come on board, you know, getting them together. Trying that out now, seeing how it works. But I think that, you know, if we start working towards that and moving towards it, I think that we'll see a much bigger change then, because we'll have focus and direction then. You know, I think we need to plan for as peaceful a resolution as possible, much like our founding fathers did with that olive branch petition. Set up our infrastructure just in case the committees of safety and the militia. If we saw during the revolutionary period, we didn't go without government. Our committees of safety in the Continental Congress was our government. We didn't have that internal chaos that all the other revolutions had. And they set it up just so that there wouldn't be that chaos in case they didn't get that peaceful resolve.
I'd really like to see something like that happen. Part of the challenge is, though, to get to wean people off of big government and get them to the point that they want to be self-reliant. I had a man call me on the phone many years ago, and he had me do something that I wish I could get other people to do it, because I've never been sorry for it. But anyway, this guy calls me. He was in New York. I'd never met him before in my life, and we had a real short conversation. I'll go over with you, and you'll see how short it was. He said, "Can you name me anything the government is good at doing besides raising taxes and maintaining the military?" He said, "Are they effective at anything?" And I sat there for a minute and thought about it, and I said, "You know, honestly, I really can't think of anything they can do good." And he said, that's my point. He said, government keeps wanting more power, more control, and every time that they get more power, more control, they manage to screw it up.
Yes.
And he said, "I'm trying to get people to take a pledge in their life." And he said, "It may sound difficult, it may go against your better nature if you took this pledge. But," he said, "you let a few years go by and you see the wisdom of it." And I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "You pledge right now that you will never do anything that would increase the size, power, or scope of government." And I've done it. It hasn't been popular, because somebody will come along and say, "If we do this or that, it'll make us safe, or it'll give us something. It'll be of some benefit to you or to me individually."
Okay.
And I turn it down. It doesn't matter what it is, I'm against it.
I agree. You know, I think that, you know, I think part of our problem is that we have strayed from the Constitution. You know, we really lost understanding of what the Constitution means and says. You know, and all of our problems can be resolved by going back to the Constitution with clarification of a few areas. Maybe a law, you know, maybe some suggestions on a law or two that need to be passed. For instance, like federal grand juries having to be convened with a petition of, I don't know, 0.01% of the people or something. So we can bring these politicians that are violating their oath of office or the Constitution. And if we get if the grand jury feels that enough evidence is, that the evidence is sufficient, then they can be tried in their own states. But I think there has to be that accountability and the subordination of the people again, with we the people being able to call them to the mat. I think these are a lot of the issues that we need to look at for what that, you know, final solution could be and how it's going to keep us from falling back into this trap again.
I'm with you in spirit. I don't really know how to make it happen, though, right off the...
Well, maybe we need to start having those conversations. You know, we need to find, maybe we can bring people, you, me, some others that I, you know, that I've been talking with. You know, I know that Ohio Minuteman Militia is fully on board with this. I know that Tennessee Militia, I know a lot of other people are. And I know there are some really good thinkers there, people that I can help cement and formulate a plan. So, you know, I mean, if you're interested, I'd love to, you know, talk to you and maybe start hammering out some ideas, you know, maybe get these people on board. So, hey, if anybody is interested out there, you know, if you think that you have some ideas or suggestions, you know, and you'd like to step up to the plate, you know, now's the time. Here's the opportunity. Here's the invitation. Get in touch with me. RandyMack@UFTreadOnMe.com. You know, we've already got a basic template set up. We already have ideas on how this could work. We put it together in 11 90-minute audios, laying it out in detail. We've got it in writing. We've got all kinds of info on committees of safety and militia. But if you'd like to be one of those people involved in, you know, actually hammering it out and being able to present it to everybody else, get in touch. We've already got a small group of people. We'd like to get more people involved, get more people active. So, Jimmy, let me know if you're interested, man. You know, we'll see where we stand. We'll get together and we'll start talking, see what we can come up with. But it has to start somewhere. It has to start somewhere, though. You know, like, this is the whole point of this show. Conversations like this have to go on. You know, as far as the militia goes today, right now, what are some of the problems you see with us? What are some of the major obstacles we're facing?
The major obstacle that we're facing, and I know a lot of people disagree with it, but people are wasting too much time on the internet and talk radio as places to get their basic information, and they're allowing themselves to be led by, on one hand, people who have a national socialist outlook on life, and at the other hand, you have the New World Order through the Council on Foreign Relations. And I'll give you some examples of it. Some of the biggest guys that you know in talk radio, Sean Hannity, and the other guy, Glenn Beck, they both work for Fox News. Fox News is owned by Rupert Murdoch and a Muslim Saudi prince. As it turns out, Rupert Murdoch sits on the board on the, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, I don't believe for a minute that Rupert Murdoch is going to let independent thought come out of one of his people's mouths. And Glenn Beck is an entertainer. He'll give you 97% of the truth, and then this 3% crap that negates all of it. You know, he can talk about freedom and God bless America and everything else 97% of the time, and he can do three things to backtrack on it and to really, you know, really screw people up. And you have to remember, just a few years ago, Glenn Beck was anti-militia. He was about as wacko liberal as you can get. Now he's the good guy. And if you get on some of these sites, I remember back when the internet was just getting popular, that we had over 4,000 people in the militia back in the, like, 1998, 99. And people started getting on the discussion boards, and they started getting the internet, and then Y2K didn't pan out for them, and a lot of people dropped off. But I've never changed my basic message. And every time that I've stood firm on it, we've had these political propaganda prostitutes that could come out there and convince people to do things that, in my mind, when I was looking back on it, and I'm sitting there warning people, don't do it, and they do it anyway. And even today, they still don't acknowledge I was right. For instance, I stood against the war in Iraq because I said, you're asking Congress to write a blank check to George W. Bush. What happens? You don't have a formal declaration of war like it calls for in the Constitution. I said, that man just bet his presidency and the future of the Republican Party on a lie. And everybody's like, well, if we got to do something, then it needs to be a decision that's supported by all these other guys. And that's exactly what happened. Bush didn't get the easy win that he went in there for, and the people come back and said it's Bush's war. It was Bush's war. He asked for the blank check, and we could not hold the Democrats responsible for it. And the Democrats are sitting there with all the cards. If it fails, it's Bush's war. If it succeeds, we supported the war. It was a win-win for them and a lose-lose for George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go down the list historically and tell you the people that are in control of the one world government, they have literally hoodwinked us to where we'll believe anything. Of course, you know, most people across the country know that one of my pet peeves is all this immigration crap with around the United States and keep the Hispanics out, and we're going to hire all these federal mercenaries to come in with their machine guns and keep people from the from south of the border from coming here, and we're going to magically keep all the drugs out. And what's really happening is we're building up this massive police state, and the courts are going to rule against you in the end.
Yes.
You're going to wind up with these drones in the air. You're going to wind up with a military slash police that can crush you at any time, and we're building it up for them.
Well, you know, I think part of that.
We don't want.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We don't want to take the responsibility of breaking down our problems into categories that we can address and then deal with it. You know, what they're. I know that I draw a lot of ire from people, but I'm telling you, our predecessors had enough sense that when they banned alcohol and it didn't work out for them, they repealed that amendment. We don't have enough sense to just go ahead and legalize drugs. We see them building this wall, and that's supposed to save us. They resorted to tunnels, catapults, and even corrupting our own police forces. So it don't matter what you do there. As long as there's supply and demand, we don't ever address the demand side of the equation over here. There's always going to be drugs. I don't care how big you build your massive government. And they're going to turn all that technology against us.
You know, I think right on much of that. You know, we started having all of these wars on concepts and morality, you know, on these intangibles. You know, a war has always been defined as, you know, an enemy, you know, the Mongolians with Rome, Hitler, whoever it was. You always had a defined enemy, a physical enemy that you could go and fight. But then we started coming up with these wars on concepts and wars on ideology and wars on morality, on poverty. And that in itself created that, created the war so they could start creating that paramilitary or, you know, police state buildup. I mean, look at the 80s when we came up with the war on drugs. SWAT teams, I mean, they came out with the propaganda. All those TV shows with the SWAT teams kicking in your doors really started then. You know, started in the 70s with cops kicking in the door, but then they started showing the goons in black, you know, the black-clad ninjas kicking in doors. So we got used to the SWAT teams. It became normal for us. So when we saw it on the news, it wasn't so bad because we've been seeing it on TV. And now if you look around, now it goes even beyond that now. Now you have, you know, actual police going out and training in Iraq and Afghanistan with the military now and then coming back with that experience. You know, and we've allowed this police state to build up. And I think that's where we need to stop. And I think part of the problem, like you said, we don't know where to really begin or how to start this. I think we have 10,000 people out there running around in 10,000 different directions trying to tackle the symptoms of the problem and never realizing if we just fix the problem and we focus on the problem, all the symptoms will go away.
Well, you know, they're trying to address symptoms with things they think will benefit them. But you brought up something that a lot of people, I don't know if they aren't thinking about this or what is short-circuiting. When you have police that go to all these foreign countries and they're learning how to deal with these people that we're at war with, you're training your police to be military. And several years ago, there was a difference. A soldier was trained to shoot, ask questions later. Your police were taught, we have to investigate, we have to assess the situation, then we make a decision as to whether we have to go in with our guns blazing. So we're turning our whole society into one where it's being policed by military-minded people rather than people who were real, you know, peace officers.
Yes. Good, yes. And, you know, when we look at the peace officer aspect, you know, You know, Gary Hunt and I were talking about this before, and, you know, a peace officer, it could be anybody. You know, I could contact you, sign an agreement with you to be a police, you know, to become a peace officer for my block, my community, whatever. You know, pay you a dollar, and it's lawful. You are then a lawful representative of the community, and you have the right to engage in keeping the peace. You know, but we've changed that to when we became the police state, and we now have police officers. It's a scary thing there.
It is when you have to fear them more than the criminals that they're supposed to be protecting you against.
Well, I agree. You know, somebody was asking in the chat room if we could define the COS. If you don't mind, you know, do you mind if we regress back a little bit and clarify them for him? And if you got, you know, basically the committees of safety were created by our founding fathers. Sam Adams, I believe, created the first one, or the first committee of correspondence, I believe. Getting old, I'm 40 years old, so I've got 10,000 books jumbling and, you know, a million facts jumbling through my head. So, Gary, if I misstate anything, Gary will correct me in the chat room. But basically, the Committees for Safety were set up as that civil authority of we the people, because all power vested in the government is derived from the people. But in a constitutional republic like what we have, it is not the people's right to engage. You do not have the authority of government yourself. It has to be through elected representatives, or through selective representatives, through some representative body. You yourself do not have the power of the military. You cannot declare war. You cannot commission militia on your, or commission militia officer on your own. It had to come through a representative body. Now, in our founding fathers' time, that was the Committees of Safety. The most famous Committee of Safety meeting was the Continental Congress and the Constitutional Convention. Those were just the delegates from the state committees of safety. The state committees of safety were just delegates from the county committees of safety, provincial committees of safety, which were just delegates from the local township committees of safety. If there was a militia, it had a committee of safety. Even if it was a town of 100 people, there was a committee of safety usually, and a militia there. So that's what the committees of safety were. It was a civil authority when the government was not strong in an area, for instance, in the territories, or in the frontiers. The committees of safety could muster the militia. They removed governors. You know, they ordered the militia to remove governors from in our past. If there was hardships, the committee of safety could come out and deal with those hardships. You know, fires, you know, whatever, earthquakes, natural, whatever it was. You know, that was not the militia's job to handle that. The militia's job was to fight and defend the Constitution and freedom. That's it. That's all the militia's job was. As the militia, the committee of safety handled everything else when it dealt. You know, if it was handling those problems, it handled those problems that it dealt with the communities and the civics of the area. Removing judges, commissioning officers in the militia, whatever it was, handing out blankets on a cold night when there was a fire and people lost their homes. Those were all things that the committees of safety would engage in. So, if anybody is interested, you can find more information about the committees of safety at www.committee.org. Now, if you don't mind, one more comment about that. Now, there's another organization out there that's purporting to be Committees of Safety. They call themselves CommitteesofSafety.com. And Dr. Edwin Vieira, as much as I enjoy listening to him and I agree with majority of what he says, because all he talks about is bottom up, which is how the Committees of Safety were formed. The township told the county what to do. The county told the state what to do. The Continental Congress did nothing unless it was approved by their state. But they didn't agree to anything unless it was approved by our state delegates. But that committee of safety organization that they created is very much a top-down organization, so I can't back that. It's not in line with what the founding fathers did and what Gary and I talk about here. So, you know, go and read our information, though, and you'll see, and if you read the two pages, and you'll see what the founding fathers did, and we back everything up, or Gary has put this together himself. You'll see what the founding fathers themselves said about the committees of safety and historically what they did. And then compare that with what the other Committee of Safety is doing, I think you'll see a huge difference there. So, let me ask you this question, Jim. From what I'm understanding, you know, you guys have had a lot of success down in Georgia. What are you guys doing that is working for you that other people that might work for other people? What are some of those pitfalls that you've managed to avoid? How have you guys managed to stay out of or keep your people out of jail, like the Hootery, you know, the Minutemen or the Montana Minutemen, you know, the Freemans, all these people? How have you managed to avoid those complications and conflicts? What have you done right that other people could learn from?
Well, the first thing is that when other militia groups get going, they don't understand our method of operations, that we don't bring people in and we introduce you to everybody in the whole state. I try to tell people, even if we go to public meetings, that you don't necessarily need to stand up there and advertise who you are, what you believe in, and so on and so forth. There has to be some level of anonymity. Secondly, we have a waiver of liability in an agreement that people enter into that says, you know, I don't work for the government. I don't work for someone who's opposed to this. You know, I'm really an individual, a citizen of this state, or somebody that's qualified to be in the militia, and I'm just wanting to join the militia, and I won't hold anyone responsible for any injuries that I have, and I won't go out and make a public statement that involves the militia. That way we don't have just, a lot of groups will just say, we got plausible deniability. We'll let somebody go off and do something and claim to be whoever they want to be, and if you do it around us, I'm going to come out with this notarized piece of paper if you ever do anything against us that says this person agreed they would not do that. Okay, they were a member. I won't try to lie to you, but so far in our history, we've only had two people that we had to dishonorably discharge. And that was, for me personally, that was a nightmare because they resented it so bad that they got discharged from the militia. They incorporated, trying to keep us from using the name. I feel certain, beyond any certainty, that they were the people who became confidential informants and told the police that I was they said I was going to militia meetings and teaching people how to build silencers and urge them to shoot cops at roadblocks. And for that, I wound up on a hit list under the Patriot Act, and they listed me as a domestic terrorist enemy combatant, and they were getting ready to make a hit on me and kill me. And a newspaper reporter got wind of it, and you know, for me telling him my story and doing an exclusive on it, he went in and exposed it, which caused a GBI agent, which is Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the main guy who started releasing information about me, made it easy to find. He got reprimanded, demoted, letters in his file. They did everything they could do to him except fire him. He was put in a position of lesser authority. No, they did everything they could to him without firing him just to keep me out of court. And my former employer, they went belly up because they had fired me for literally no reason. And then they came into the newspapers and interviewed them, and they made a lot of bad comments about me. So there was no way they could sustain it. So it took a couple of years out of my life, but no one else was affected by it. And when it all comes out in the wash, you know, these people did what they were accused of doing. We gave them a fair chance at a tribunal to disprove the charges, and they don't want to avail themselves of it. They preferred to go out and wage a war against us. But I think that's the worst thing that's happened. Most people will, you know, if they know that I'm here in the militia and long as I've got my name to this, then I'm going to keep my word.
Well, you know, I think that's where it has to start from. I think we have to be well-defined in what our mission statements are, who we are, what we're about. I think that before we can really progress towards, you know, actually getting that thing, you know, getting towards that solution, the militia out there really have to look at who they are and what they're really about. And, you know, if they don't have, you know, they can get rid of those misconceptions and those fallacies about militia and about civil, you know, about our history, in fact. You know, I think we focus too much on conspiracy theories and Illuminati and Masons and all this other crap, and I think that that's for a reason, of course. You know, misinfo, disinfo, distraction, divide and conquer, you name it. The Department of Justice has openly stated, you know, we will do everything to disrupt and break up any grassroots organization, including creating them ourselves, which the CIA has openly admitted they did with, like, the John Birch Society, the militia back in the 50s. Our modern militia movement is a creation of CIA production. So, you know, and I think that, you know, once we get past that stuff, we can actually start, you know, getting past the conspiracy theories and say, you know, anytime something comes up, I try to say, ask people, how does this, you know, how does our action, you know, towards this problem work towards our freedom? If we solve this problem, will it give us back our freedom? No. Well, then why are we worrying about it? Let's attack the problem. And this problem and this symptom will go away. I think that's what we have to do. I think that we ourselves have to become disciplined and, you know, ask ourselves this question. Does, you know, if I engage upon this action, does it promote the overall freedom of the country? Does it solve the problem? No. Well, then I guess it's a waste of time. Or it's not as important right now.
Well, I'm going through a kind of a personal crisis with things like that because I've been trying a strategy that don't work. And I have to look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day, and I'm, you know, I spend more time, I guess, worried about this than I do about the direction of the country. But I know a lot of times when people are putting confidential informants, cops, and everything else into business to compete against me. And there was a group that, you know, everybody just, every time we have a disagreement, they'll go, oh, it's infighting. You know, they chalk it up to that. But these people came into business on the basis of a lie. And then they appointed this guy. He walks in off the street, and they just appointed him to be an officer. And I knew who he was. So I get a visit from the Leo community, and they say, if you tell one person who that is, if his cover is blown, we will charge you with obstruction of justice. So even when I tell people, hey, this group is not what it claims to be, and I may know someone in there, I'm not sure what my duty is anymore to sit back and be silent and let the people get busted. For instance, this group that was tied in with Darren Huff, I told the people when that group formed who it was being formed by. And everybody says, oh, you don't like them, so you're just calling them white supremacists. And then now they come up with this plausible deniability. We didn't know who Darren Huff was. Of course you did. Even if you didn't, what did you say that was so attractive to this guy that a known Christian identity pastor would join the group? You know, what was there that was attractive about it? There had to be something. So, you see what my dilemma is?
I do, and you know what? Gary and I have had this conversation. And so many people and I have had this conversation. You know, what do we do about things like this? You know, what do you do about the, you know, the people that come out and you know that they're, what they're doing is unconstitutional, that they're not legitimate or whatever. You know, how do you present this to the public? And, you know, the only thing I can honestly think of is this. You know, I think, again, you know, if we had committees of safety, I hate to keep preaching on that, but my God, that I truly believe that the committees of safety and the militia working in their respective roles are the solution. So, I mean, I have to keep going back to that. But I think that, you know, if we had committees of safety up and running and active, and not just one or two. We need lots. That's the problem. We never get enough going of anything. I think that they that would be a situation that they could handle. You know, they could come out and they could discuss these things and say, okay, look, you know, we've got this person here in our state. We need to decide what's going on here and how to present this, and then let them handle it. If it's on a national level, you know, like let's say the Tim Turners, then you know the states need to, you know, the counties would get together and form a state committee of safety. And let's remember, you only need 3 to 5 people to form a committee of safety at first. That's it. That's it. I'm sure some of your militias out there have 3 to 5 guys who are long in the tooth and know a whole bunch about history. Put them there. Let them start taking on those roles. They can still be trainers if that's their role in the militia now. You know, but I think that if that's our solution there. You know, we have these groups openly come out and, you know, either promote or discourage, you know, these groups or you know, denounce these people if need be.
Well, the whole problem is I've been denouncing groups, and again, to give you this same example, I would tell people this group is actually the reconstituted Ku Klux Klan. And every time that I would find people like J.J. Harper, and you could go and you could, you know, type this guy's name into Google, the Klan, and you get all kinds of hits. He's publicly known. Well, he was in this group. The minute he was busted, they said, oh, he just posted on our board. We don't really know who he is. And he just quietly disappears. But, you know, he probably comes back on the board as someone else. And then another one, and then another one. And then eventually you're up to Darren Huff, who gets busted, and you know, he tells the media, I'm with this group and also a member of the other. And he claimed membership in two groups, and they all knew who he was. So I caught all matters of HELL from both sides, and they're saying, oh, it's just infighting. I'm like, no, I know what these guys are about. I can sit down. I've been around the block enough to where I can sit down and tell you within 10 minutes, and I'm not blowing smoke at you because I'll tell you a little about my personal self. In 1977, I was pretty heated from what had happened a few years earlier, affirmative action, racial quotas and that sort of thing, and I got laid off one job after another. White people literally had a really hard time. We had a little bit less unemployment than you have today, percentage-wise, but it was harder on us because the companies were trying to balance everything out and give black people jobs over whites. So every chance that I had back then, I would fight at people, and I wound up in the first Border Patrol in 1977. And I got to meet people along the way. There was a guy named Pastor Sheldon Emery. He put us up for a few days on our trip out there on the way back. He was in Arizona. We were going to California, so we got to stay there with him, you know, for a few days. And I met another guy that was in the John Birch Society. He switched his party affiliation from Republican to Democrat, and he ran as a U.S. representative, and he won the Democrat nomination, and he ran against an incumbent, so he didn't do so hot, but he ran on the same identical platform as Jim Gilchrist. Now watch this guy transform. I'll say the name, you'll probably recognize it. His name was Tom Metzger. Tom Metzger was at one time, he was a John Birch Society member, which is like the Tea Party, and he was a serious candidate. So I watched that go down. I watched David Duke get elected to public office. And then I was working with a man who was a speaker in the John Birch Society, and, you know, we all had the same kind of feelings toward government that the Tea Party does, but as people got more in depth, and you could watch the transformation. I didn't know that that's what I was watching when I was younger, but I could see it happening. This other guy, his name was Lieutenant Colonel Jack Moore. He's a co-founder of the Militia of Georgia. He would come out here and and help me promote meetings and so forth. Lieutenant Colonel Moore was the first man captured in the Korean War. He was tortured, beaten, sentenced to death, and he managed to escape. And he went on to fight. He wrote military manuals. Well, he came back to this country, and he's in the John Birch Society, and we're out there fighting all these evils. He transformed until he became a Christian Identity minister. So by the time they came out with the Minutemen, I'm sitting there looking at it, and I can tell you, I can say, this guy is going to turn out, if he's not a National Socialist, he's going to turn out being one. So is this one. And now you can go look them up on YouTube, and there they are, out there in the rallies, you know, giving the old Sieg Heil. And so when I run across these people in organizations, I know who they are. I know what they are. You're dealing with somebody that started out in the 70s. And I tell people, if you think I'm blowing smoke, pick up the telephone, call David Duke, and ask him if he knows my name. Pick up the telephone, call Don Black. Say, do you know this man? You know, I've known him since I was kids. So I've watched the transformation of people. And I don't know anymore. Maybe we've gotten to the point where we are, where the people who used to back us and believe in the Constitution, maybe we believe more in National Socialism because those are the kind of people that the majority are attracted to.
Okay.
And I'm kind of wasting my breath to sit there and say, you know, I know it's a matter of public record. I told people at least 2 years before Chris Simcox, for instance, was busted, that the guy was a National Socialist. I mean, everything, the ideology that came out of his mouth was that. And people think, well, he's picking on me. And now I'm thinking about it. Maybe we've gotten to a point where our society is just uneducated. You know, you talk about the Committee of Safety. I'll bet you if you got people away from the Internet, well, they couldn't look it up real quick. And you just took a poll, I'll bet that at least 80% of the people that are in this movement, even leaders, wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about. So they hear they hear some idea they think is great, and you pose it to them, and they'll sit there and accept it, simply because they're basically, we've done a bad job of educating people.
Well, I've got a question for you. It came from the chat room, and I was going to throw my comments on here as well, my thoughts on this, but somebody had asked in the chat room, why can't a white supremacist group form a militia as long as it's subordinate to the civil authority? If that's what's accepted in their community, we go back to the freedom of association thing. If that's accepted in their community, why can't they form a militia in their community as long as they're subordinate to the civil authority? What's your thoughts on that?
As a unit, you know, and that's why I stress here in Georgia, I can't tell an individual unit who you can pick and who you cannot pick for your individual community members. You know, that's clearly, if they do decide something like that, well, then that's well within their purview. But here's where it gets complicated. If we have a statement, you know, here's principles, these are things we want to do as a collective militia, do they back us or don't they? You know, we were a little more, I tend to think in the 80s, we were a little more knowledgeable. Although you had people who were racist, we were more knowledgeable about what this country really stands for. Because when we went to this guy's farm in 85, I think it was, in that instance where it ended in an armed standoff, most of the people there were white supremacists, and this was a black man, and we were say his farm. You know, we're out there working on his behalf because we were smart enough to realize, hey, if they will jerk this man around with his rights, then the government gives a rat's rear end what their rights are. They don't care what anyone else's rights are. They look at it like, this guy's my enemy, I got to do what it takes to destroy it. And if that means bringing the Constitution of the United States down, you know, that's fair game. And we're seeing it every day.
Okay, I can agree with that. Here's some of the things that I think on that subject now. As far as the white supremacists go, or white, you know, or any, or white separatists, there is a difference between supremacists and separatists, by the way, everybody out there. If you don't know the difference, go look it up. You need to, you know, if you're going to be against something, you got to know what you're against. Or if you're for something, you better know what you're for. Excuse me. But I feel that it doesn't matter what a person's personal ideology is or their belief system is. I believe that everybody has the right to form militia. And if the community is of that take or that persuasion, then that militia could be formed. We cannot judge a person's ideology. We can only judge them by their actions. Now, if let's say a white supremacist militia group does form, and they violate those basic tenets of life, liberty, and property, then they need to be held accountable for their actions, just like any other militia or person out there who isn't a white supremacist who violates those tenets of life, liberty, and property. For instance, you know, there's nothing illegal about saying, you know, I don't like black people. Great. But now if you go and hang a black man, well, that it becomes illegal, and that person needs to be held accountable for those actions. So.
Oh, okay, you put it like that, but let me put it to you a different way. If you're part of a militia, statewide militia, and in this case, this is a prevalent point of view, and it's one where, you know, I don't know the answer anymore. That's why I say, are we going to be governed by Constitution, or are we going to become socialists? Now, here's a real dead giveaway. People who are anti-immigrant, and they can say, oh, we're just anti-illegal immigrant. They make the fundamental flaw that exposes who they are. And I'll tell you what it is.
What's that?
This is the first thing they say to me is in their arguments. And here's the first one. The first thing that they say that I know instinctively I'm talking to someone who's either an idiot or they're a national socialist. They're stealing our jobs. Well, here's a newsflash for you. We're a free market economy, and a job belongs to the employer who creates it. And as much as we may despise him, if he decides he wants to hire someone from south of the border, that's his job, not your job. And boy, when you tell somebody that's hopped up on that, oh, they get mad and crap at you. The second way, and you begin to wonder, well, if these people are a national socialist or communist, they falsely accuse people from south of the border coming over here, and they say they don't pay taxes. They say, well, what taxes is it you're claiming they don't pay? They start stuff about fake ID, and that hasn't been possible since, you know, in 5 years, almost 6 years now. That's been a near impossibility. Plus, it's been illegal for them to get welfare since 96. But, you know, they'll start talking about that. Well, they don't pay taxes. I said, what taxes is it you claim they don't pay? Let's go through all the taxes. You know, and there's hundreds and hundreds of taxes. The only one they can tell you is the income tax. Well, income tax is a plank out of the Communist Manifesto. The income tax is never legally passed. And I'm thinking, I worked for 20 years overturning this freaking tax. And then you guys came along with this national ID bill, which is Hitler's idea on steroids, and you gave it instant credibility again. So there was 20 years of my life shot over this ridiculous immigration argument. And to me, it's a no-brainer to fix it. But every issue, every single issue, and people think I get hopped up on this, but every single issue that is near and dear to the patriot's heart, every one of them intersects with the immigration issue. They're systematically using that to destroy the Constitution of this country.
I agree there. You know, I No, I think a lot of it is that we have become so PC that we forgot that these people have a, you know, that it doesn't matter what your opinion is or how you differ in your opinion from my opinion. You have the right to that opinion as long as you don't infringe upon anybody else's right to life, liberty, and property. You know, I think the pursuit of happiness is way too ambiguous and vague there. You know, originally said property. And that's where it comes down to. Now, you had mentioned the employer, you know, that business owner's right. And, you know, I was actually, you know, we talk about free markets, and one of the biggest proponents of the free market system out there was Ron Paul's mentor, Murray Rothbard. He was the creator of the one of the founders of the Libertarian Party. He was considered, you know, a modern day Jefferson. My first 2 years in university, I was actually one of his students, and, you know, him and Hans Hoppe kind of took me under the wing. I was very inquisitive, and I was not afraid to start expressing my ideas or even countering them on their ideas. You know, and I agree with some aspects of the free market economy. You know, but if we look at the true libertarian ideal of what Rothbard and Hans Hoppe talked about, I can't agree with a lot of that. I believe, you know, my personal opinion is that, you know, if we look at the Constitution, it gave the states, you know, each state had the ability to determine their own citizenship, who could come in, who couldn't come in. Who was legal, you know, things like that. And there was a sense of nationalism there as well. I do believe in some protectionism philosophies. We have to have protectionism. If we produce nothing, then we are vulnerable. And if companies are actually encouraged to go outside of our country to produce and manufacture goods, well, we end up in a service economy like we are now. So I believe we do need some protectionism in the U.S. So I agree with most of the philosophies of free markets, but I also agree that if we want to remain free and we want to maintain our culture and our way of life, we have to have some protectionist aspects in there.
Well, as far as keeping jobs within the United States where it benefits us directly, that's an easy problem to fix. You have to create severe tax cuts. You would have to create some real big tax breaks right now to generate business and get it stimulated. But the way you do it is tell a business, you know, can enjoy this low tax rate. But if you're going to outsource your jobs, you're going to start losing tax benefits to where it's, at some point, it becomes economically unfeasible for them to export jobs, you know, and to send their business to a foreign country. But while they're in this country, although someone else may be working a job, if you look at it historically, as long as a person's here, it don't matter what their citizenship is. If they're here and they're working and they're producing something, it's benefiting all of us. Because if you've got a man who comes here and he's working in this country, he's not only working and making money, he's also consuming goods and services. Plus, he's adding to your productive output. So, I don't see it as being a threat when people are here working, regardless of where they come from. The problem or the big issue where I disagree with most of my critics is that they think the only way you should come in here is to be a citizen. Nah. I don't want these people who come here and they want to partake of the business. I don't want them to be forced into citizenship because I worked in immigration law for 6 years.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you that a lot of people that I helped, and which is why I don't do it anymore, even though I don't get by nowhere near what I used to, I'm working class now. I mean, almost the point of being broke, but I won't do it because the moment that someone gets their papers, they're here for papers to go to work. They don't care about your culture. They don't care about your government. They don't care about squat.
True.
If they go and they vote, they're going to vote for a liberal for the same reason that all the other people that are of low intelligence go and vote for a liberal. Because the guy says, I'm going to do something for you. You know, I'm going to make it easy for you and your family. You'll get something for nothing. That's the big lure of Democrats. And that's what they promise these people who come here and you force them into citizenship. I say, you know, let them come over here, work as a guest worker, and when the job ends or when they become to the point where they're a burden on society, they leave.
You know, I can agree with parts of that. In fact, you know, if you look at our founding, you know, if you look at the time up until the Revolutionary War, you know, the 1880s or so, you'll find that, you know, immigration was handled by the states. The Constitution says that, you know, that the Congress has the right to enforce or determine citizenship, immigration, eligibility, things like that. You know, if you look at our past, though, during those free market days, you know, when we supposedly had a true free market economy, you know, a lot of that happened. You know, you had Asian business owners coming here and working. You had whoever. People were coming and working, and it was up to the states to decide whether they wanted them there or not. And I can agree with parts of that. I can agree with that. You know, and I agree with the part that, you know, if a business wants to go outside of the country, fine. Go outside of the country, go make cars in China. But, man, you're going to have a hell of a time getting them in here, man, because they're going to be too expensive to sell because we're going to tax the hell out of you. We will make it damn impossible for you to sell them here because we will just tax the hell out of you. I agree with that as well. You know, part of that time...
You know, well, it doesn't even have to be like manufacturing. A lot of times, I have this problem a lot with things like copy machines or fax machines. Something go wrong, I pick up the phone, call 1-800 number to get technical support, and I get somebody on there that is from India, and they can't enunciate, and the only thing they're doing is reading the same manual to me that I own. And you say, where are you at? Well, they're in India, they're in Pakistan, you know, they're in some foreign country, and it's an American company. And, we're shipping all those jobs over there, so they're claiming, the status of an American, and they have the prestige of our country, and, any tax advantages. The biggest one that we offer to corporations is limited so that, you know, individual owner don't lose his butt, the company goes belly up. So they have all these advantages of being an American company, but they're taking advantage of cheap labor out here in a foreign country, and it doesn't benefit us. So if we tax the crap out of them and say, okay, you can work them, but we're going to tax you so heavily that it won't, you know, it'll be cheaper if you just go and hire Americans here to do the work, since this is where you're claiming to be a business from.
You know, I'm a product of a lot of my beliefs and philosophies come from that Libertarian Party philosophy, you know, that Murray Rothbard, Hans Hoppe, von Mises, you know, that von Mises mentality, you know, the John Locke's and them. You know, so a lot of that comes from there, but again, I tend to be a bit nationalist as well. I see the great points of that. For instance, you know, that libertarian revolution that they talk about, you know, where all functions of government are handled by corporations or companies, private companies, and we can get rid of them, you know, and, you know, we'll have a judicial, you know, we'll have people, you know, bidding for the job of handling our courts and handling our policing and things like that, and we will bid on them, and if we don't like one, we'll fire them and bring in a new one. I see the problems with that because that's kind of what we have now. You know, it doesn't work unless you have a very heavily, heavily educated and very active, socially active population. And for the majority of any history in any period of time, we don't have that. We've never had that, and that's not how human nature is. So I see the flaws and the fallbacks of it. And I think this is some of the areas that, you know, we need to hammer out these ideas. You know, what is going to be our lawful immigration process? What kind of immigrants do we want here? I know, for instance, that I don't want, I'm in Canada right now. So I see what the type of, you know, I see the heavy immigration problems that are going on up here as well as in the U.S. And the types of immigrants that Canada's bringing in are not beneficial to the society. They add nothing or they don't contribute to the society. They come here, they're very separatist, they don't acclimate. They don't come here to become Canadians or Americans. Some do. I'm not going to say all, but some do. Some do, not all, though. The majority do.
Well, why would you? You know, if they come there to work, why would you want them as citizens if all they are workers?
That's my point, though. But they get citizenship, and now, though, it creates that destruction of culture. And I think that is important because if we look back through all civilizations, it's the destruction of culture that caused the destruction of the country itself. You know, if you look in the U.S. today, we've lost our American culture. We, you know, militia used to be part of our culture. COS used to be part of our culture. So many things used to be part of our culture, and now these things are gone. In fact, it's actually considered hatred, you know, hate speech. If you talk about some of these cultural aspects, it's considered, you know, I mean, if you are even pro anything pro-American for the benefit of America, you're anti-somebody. So I disagree with that. Everybody, I hate to do this. My phone is dying on me, and I had to bring Jimmy on the phone. He doesn't have Skype. So I'm going to have to move away from the desk for a minute and grab another phone. Jimmy, if you don't mind, what I'd like you to do is talk about, you know, is kind of go into how we can fix this. You know, what kind of immigration system could we have in America? What would be good for America? And I'll go grab another phone real quick, and I'll be right back.
Well, personally, I think the way to fix the immigration problem in this country is we need to have a treaty. The way the treaty works is basically pretty simple. Other countries would sign on to it. They could send us guest workers as we needed them. If a company wanted to hire someone, they could hire them. And when this person has made their money, the job comes to an end or whatever, they leave. In exchange for that, the Mexican government would double the manpower that we have on the border to make sure that people don't do improper border crossings. And part of the treaty would also state that a couple comes over here, they're working, and they have a child while they're here. Well, that child retains the citizenship of its birth parents, which would make it whatever nationality that they were. So when they leave, that child leaves, it's not an American citizen. That does away with this birth citizenship issue, and it completely eliminates it. It pretty much takes care of your problem on the border, but it does allow people to come here from other countries to work jobs as guest workers in a situation now where we don't have that. We have a really bizarre screwed up system that's 50 plus years old, and it isn't working. It doesn't address the needs. So the only way that people can come over here is to make improper crossings, and you have employers willing to hire these people. So they've pretty much challenged the Constitution or what they believe is unconstitutional acts, which they have a right to do. You know, the Supreme Court says that if you think something is unconstitutional, you have the right to disobey the law. And they've pretty much done that because the supply and demand, it's all out of kilter because we're relying on 50-plus-year-old statutes, so we're trying to mix in some modern ones, and it doesn't make any sense.
I agree with that. You know what, Jimmy, I need to interrupt you here for a second. I'm not used to doing the shows on the phone anymore. I've been using Skype and everything now, so my other phone is not charged, and the third phone I have does not have a speakerphone on it. So these batteries are both dying, and my other phone doesn't have a speakerphone now. So we're going to kind of hold off here as long as we can in this conversation, but we might get cut off. If we do, if the call drops, that's the end of the show, then my phone's died. But, Jimmy, you know, what I would like to do is maybe start presenting some of these discussions on air. You know, maybe bring about a special show. Normally my shows are Sunday and Monday. But I'd like to bring on an additional show maybe next week if possible, or, you know, later this week. Actually, next week would be better, I think. And maybe have you and a couple of other of these people that I think are some of these thinkers and some of these people that might be able to start hashing out some of these ideas, and let's start looking at them. Would you be interested in doing something like that?
Well, I sure would.
All right. Well, then I'll tell you what. I'll get in touch with you about that. I don't know how much longer my battery is going to last. Sometimes it lasts 30, 40 minutes after it beeps at me. Other times it's only 15 minutes. So something I would like to do here right now, we'll just consider this the last minutes that we have, is I want to go into that aspect that you had talked about with the Internet and how people, some of the problems that you had mentioned earlier. People are too busy on the Internet and things like this. I agree with you. In fact, I try to only do a couple shows a week, so I don't take up everybody's time. So what I hope is that they're actually out on the streets working. I think the Internet gives us a lot of great information as long as we remain focused on what we're looking for and what we're trying and what our purpose for being online at that time is. There's 10,000 distractions on there, though, and my God, there's a conspiracy theory for everything. And the conspiracy theorists all disagree, and they got their own 10,000 different versions of each conspiracy theory. So, I think the Internet was a dual trap, and Brzezinski even talked about that in Between Two Ages, that it would be used specifically for this, to just completely and utterly create information overload and just shut us down, so we wouldn't even know which way was up or down. I think people need to get back on the streets. What do you think? And, what are some of your suggestions for how they can go about doing this and effectively doing it? Because I know so many people out there are saying, there's nobody around, I can't find anybody. How are you finding people?
I hear that complaint all the time, but I tell people, I've got a small discussion board, for Georgia, and it draws traffic from all across the country. But I'll tell you now, you can meet people. You can get on there at different times, and there are more people that lurk than there are that post. But if you go to one spot, if everybody would stay in one spot, eventually you're going to run into somebody from, somebody's going to be there from right in your neighborhood. But people come in, they'll come to our board, they'll look it over, the posts are 4 or 5 days old, so I'll go to this one. And then they'll run over to another board, and somebody will say something they don't like, and they jump to another one, and so they're going from one board to another, and one political bandwagon to another, and they don't ever settle down. You have to make up your mind, what is it that you want to accomplish, and you're going to have to get it with a group.
Yep, sounds like you lost it there, Randy. Wow. Oh, yeah, that's a really good one tonight. This has been a fantastic show. I really haven't had anything to add because you guys have just been nailing it quite so well. I'm really covering everything. This is
I'm still on the air. Sorry about that. No, I'm still on the air. I lost Jimmy, though. So I'm going to bring Jimmy back on, though. I'm going to get him back on and we'll see if we can start finalizing this. Like I said, these discussions that you guys are talking about in this chat room, okay, these are the things that, we're trying to lay out. Gary Hunt and I have worked on this for, almost 2 years now, starting with the UFOtronomy document and then hammering out the rest of, so we've gotten input from some people, but, until we become united in what our purpose is and what we're trying to achieve, we're never going to get anywhere.
I got that right.
On some message boards, I did a post on RAM called Headless Chickens and Other Tales of Futility, where I basically asked some very basic questions, and man, I made some enemies over that, and I don't understand why. But there's some people over on this forum board now that don't like me because of that post. If you haven't read it, it's on RAM. You can find it there. Just go look on my post. If you're not a member already, go check it out, read it. And I ask a ton of questions. Now, the vast majority of people on there, though, they saw the wisdom of this. And these are the kind of questions that I'm trying to get together, and these are the people I'm trying to pull in. So, if you've got ideas, let me know. Get with Gary and I. Start looking over those documentations, then start putting your ideas down. Let's start getting these conversations going. We need to have like a weekly conference call, man. Gary and I are willing to do whatever it takes to make things happen. But the problem is making them happen. We need to go out there and present a unified front and a unified voice on what we want. The founding fathers, when they presented the olive branch petition, they were one voice. when they presented the Declaration of Independence, they were one voice. We have 10,000 different things going out there and we're not standing together on anything. And this is our problem. You know, until we get past that, we're not going to get anywhere. You know, most of our differences come from states' rights and personal beliefs. And I could care less about your personal beliefs, to be honest with you. I don't care about these petty differences we have. Those are your decisions and those are your beliefs. And as long as they don't affect me, my property, or my ability to make money, and you don't slander and libel me, I'm fine. You believe in one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eaters as some god, that's cool. Now let's put that aside and get moving back onto freedom and how to restore our republic. You know, but until we start having these conversations and people are willing to step forward and say, look, I will be part of this. I've looked over, I've taken the time, I've put in my due diligence on what you guys have presented. I like it for the most part. I don't like this, this, and this. Here's what I've found in the Constitution and from the writings of the Founding Fathers and from the Supreme Court, whatever it is, present it. But let's get something hammered out. Let's get it ironed out and let's start all working and presenting that one voice and then taking it to everybody that we can. You know, the more people that promote and present something, the more it catches on. That's how mass marketing works. But you have to have some kind of a public voice out there, which means we need people presenting it to them. And it seems like everybody is waiting for that leader to pop up or for those leaders to pop up and, you know, do that first step. The invitation's out there. You know, a lot of the work's already been done. We've got a great format. We've got a great template already laid out. It just needs to be hammered out. And we're ready to go. So get in touch with Gary Hunt. Hunt at outpost-of-freedom.com. Get in touch with me, Randy Mack, M-A-C-K, at youhavetreadonme.com. More than happy to discuss and share anything with anybody. So, you know, like you know, Jimmy was saying, you know, I think a lot of the problem is we spend too much time online and not enough time actually doing and, you know, promoting and getting things out there and actually, you know, engaging in action. Gary and I presented this idea, you know, several months ago. If you're not doing at least a couple of hours a day of work towards restoring your freedom, you know, you're just not really putting in that kind of an effort then. And if you can't put in 2 hours in one day, great, make up the time somewhere else. But, you know, is 10 hours, 14 hours a week really that much to ask of your time to put towards your freedom, your children's freedom, and their children's freedom? To get back a country that we seem to have lost. To get back a government that is just rampant. So, these are things to think about. Dave, you've been really quiet on that. You kind of just let us go. Do you have any final thoughts here or anything? Because I think I'm getting ready to close this out myself.
No, I think you nailed it. We'd absolutely have to start having these conversations and working together. The time is now. We have no more time to waste. The time draws near where it will be too late if we don't hurry up and get busy talking about useful things. And we're certainly making a lot of progress in that. I noticed how everyone was, you know, very into and engaging with the program tonight, and that gives me a lot of hope. We certainly have a lot of good people, you know, showing up for this stuff, and that's exactly what we need. And we need to just start working together and figuring these things out, and well, that's really about it. I mean, y'all nailed it. I just was intently listening all evening, going, wow, okay, well, yeah, I agree with that. You know, I really don't have much to add. I mean, it's a really fantastic program.
Well, I agree. I thought, like always, we don't agree, have to agree on everything. You know, I don't want everybody to think like me. My God, I could not handle the world if there was even another me out there. I'm too much for myself even, okay? I could not handle another me, let alone 320 million of you out there being just like me. Man, have your different beliefs, have your different philosophies. But, you know, if we're going to stand by the Constitution, let's stand by the Constitution, and let's not treat it like a Chinese food buffet. Let's not take the parts that we like and leave the rest. You know, let's clarify and let's cement what it is the Constitution says and what it means and what we're standing for and what our actions are going to be. Yes. you know, but we don't have to agree with each other on everything, just as long as we can agree on the Constitution. I don't care about anything else. That's your personal freedom at that point. That's your state's right, your county's right, and your town's right. If you don't like abortion, and you're against it, and your state says it's legal, well, then you get your county or your town to make it illegal there. And if you don't like it being legal in the state, then move to somewhere where it's not legal at all, because that's a state right. You know, if you don't like drinking, then move to a county or a town that doesn't allow booze there. But don't take it, you know, but don't think that you have the right to say that other people can't drink because you don't like it. You know, Jimmy mentioned something else earlier. You know, people talk about, well, I pay my taxes, therefore I have a right to speak. No. You know, you're not obligated to do anything that you believe is unconstitutional. As long as you can back up your argument and show why you believe it's unconstitutional. That's your right. You know, so, you know, let's not denounce people for what their beliefs are and what their beliefs aren't. You know, let's start finding ways to work together. And let's start finding a way to put forth one plan, one idea, one voice, and get it out there so that we can take back our country and then we can decide what's right in our states, our counties, and our towns. You know, somebody said we need thousands of Macs. No, we need thousands of people that have these ideas like the Macs and the Hunts and these other people out there that are willing to come together. That's what we need. We need thousands and tens of thousands of these people. But it starts somewhere, man. So, you know, hey, that invitation is out there to anybody. Please. You know, we can't do this on our own. And Gary and I have really been trying for 2 years now to get a thing going. And we, you know, when, look at the chat room. You know, the show just came back on. I have not marketed or produced it at all or promoted it at all. And tonight we had a great turnout because other people are out to promoting it for us. Well, I appreciate that. But that's how we get this going. You know, I can't do it all on my own. I've had upwards of 180 people in one chat room before on the show. So, you know, this is how we get it going. Bring others in. Let them hear these ideas if you agree with them. We've got a plan. It's a sound plan. It's constitutional, and it's based upon what the Founding Fathers said. It just needs to be hammered out and presented, you know, final product made. So get out there. Let us know what we can do to help you or how you can help us or whatever it is. You know, but again, it comes down to personal responsibility. You have to take part in this. It is your freedom. And if, you know, all you can think about, you know, and if you're, the only way you can really take part in this is online or, you know, in a blog or a chat room, then, you know, maybe you need to rethink what you're doing here. You know, it's not going to be just there. This is going to be back in the streets again. You know, let's use the internet for what we need it for, communication, information gathering, you know, valid information gathering. I mean, I don't want to hear about the latest UFO conspiracy, man, or aliens and crap like that. Please, I'm tired of the Masons. It serves no purpose and it promotes nothing and it doesn't get us back our freedom. I don't care who's behind this stuff, and I don't know who all's behind this stuff, man. You look at it, they wrote hundreds and hundreds of books about it. People like Brzezinski, Saul Alinsky, you know, H.G. Wells, you know, the Rhodes, all these people. We know what the game plan is. I don't care what little organizations they run under, and that's just nothing more than division. We fight over that stuff. So let's get past that.
Absolutely. You brought up a really good point there about the internet. We should use it as a tool while we've got it, but, you know, look at what's going on overseas. People have been, you know, getting their internet cut off, and they've been threatening to cut us off for some time. So it really underscores the need to start getting involved in our local areas and actually having a face-to-face with people. You know, getting back to the old school of actually sitting down over coffee with somebody and having a conversation.
Well, you know, somebody asked, you know, about the, you know, there's all these questions about the plan. And, you know, if you just read it, and I'll be honest with people, okay? I had to take a break for a couple of, you know, for several weeks. I was offline for about 2 months, really. I had to take a break, and because I started getting frustrated with people. You know, because they would keep asking 10,000 questions about a document that only takes 5 minutes to read, but they didn't read it. Or they wouldn't listen. And, you know, I'll be honest, I got tired of lazy people. You know, the abbreviated plan, version of the plan took me 10 minutes to read. I read it 8 times in one day when I was looking at ways to possibly rearrange it, improve upon it, you know, make it more presentable. But my God, it's a 10 minute read for me. I figure at the most 20 minute read for the average person. But very few people have read it because the questions and the comments that come back show us that you haven't. So you know, take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Read through it. Take a day to absorb it. It's a very short read. But, you know, if you're not willing to do that, just how much, then what would you be willing to do when the time came? You know, part of the problem that we have is we're uneducated and we don't understand a lot of the things that we talk about. I learn new things every day. Gary corrects me on stuff, you know. I get new ideas from other people. I look at things a different way every day. Because I'm constantly exercising my brain. I'm constantly reading. I'm constantly engaging in heavy discussions. Problem is we just want, you know, a lot of us just want to chant rhetoric and slogans, but we don't want to think anymore. We don't want to educate ourselves. So start somewhere with some people. You know, other than that, that's pretty much it. I've got a dry mouth. I had a great show tonight, man. I really enjoyed him being on. The participation in the chat room was incredible. Lots of ideas being expressed back and forth, debate, discussion, lots of good things. So, take it out there, people. Go check out committee.org, www.committee.org, uftrademy.com. If you haven't gotten the book or read the book, Resistance to Tyranny, please, at the top of my website is a link in big yellow letters, Resistance to Tyranny. There's a book by Joe Martino that I think that everybody out there must. If you are militia, you must own a copy of this, I believe. If I was dictator of the country or the planet, I would make this mandatory reading for everybody. Luckily, I'm not, so you guys, you know, but I'm highly encourage you to read it. I've read that book at least 10 times, and I've only had it in a couple of months. It is a true primer by a man whose job, this was his job in the military. He was a colonel. This was his job. This is what he got paid to do. To think about things like this. So check out that book, read it. If you've got a committee of safety up and running, even if it's only 3 people, please, please, get in touch with Gary and myself. If people don't know how to get in touch with these committees of safety when they start forming, there's not going to be any way to do it. So basic information, general location, email, that's it. That's all we need to know to start getting the word out there to these about you and about your committee of safety. You know, if you're in a small town of 500 people, you don't need 5 committees of safety there. So why have 5 different people forming them up? Let's start getting this thing organized and united. Let's start working together. So if you have any questions, get in touch with me. Hit me up on Skype. Get in touch with Gary, anybody else in the chat room. If you're in Ohio, get with Ohio Minutemen. Incredible group. I can't support them enough out there. In fact, their XO, Major Cross, is going to be on our show in 2 weeks on the 14th, December 14th. We're going to be having another show like we had tonight. Next week, I'm going to have Gary Yance on. He was in our chat room for a little bit. Gary Yance is, again, one of those people that I found to be inspirational, educated, knowledgeable about what the things we're discussing. He's a longtime veteran of this, longer than me. So, you know, I value his opinion and I value his ideas. So we're going to have him on, longtime militia member as well. So a lot of great shows coming up. Join the Committee of Safety mailing list. Get on it. Link at the bottom of the chat room on uftrademy.com. Anything else out there? Any final questions before I leave? Let me know. Otherwise, we are out of here for the night. If you want updates, like I said, I'm not really going to be marketing the show much, so... If you want to be updated on the shows, you can contact me at randymack@uftrademy.com. Put subscribe in the email subject line. I'll add you to the contact list. I want to get the show information out there and get people thinking about this stuff. Help promote the show. Do what you can. If you believe it, if you think what we're saying is valid, then help promote it. Personal responsibility on his part. You know, it's up to you to help spread the word as well. So, everybody, take care. You guys have a great night. Be safe. Anything else?
Maybe just take care of yourself and be sure to tell everybody about the show and come back and join us on Saturday for another episode of Survival Sunday. And again on Monday. We'll keep doing our best to provide intellectually stimulating programming and good conversations that are productive and solution-based. Everybody else is talking about problems. It's time for us all to get together and talk about how we're going to fix this mess.
I know, you're right. You know, we just had a thing, we just had somebody in the major cross, and I'm glad Melissa Mondays are back. And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm glad to be back as well. And I needed a little break. I had to get my head straight again, and, you know, I've seen a lot of good things happening since then. Oh, before I forget, Rifle Stock. www.riflestock2011. It's somewhere in the Arizona border. Along the border. Go check it out. I'm supportive. Gary's one of the people putting it on. So go check it out. We're going to try to get some big things going on down there. Other than that, committee.org. Committee.org and Outpost of Freedom is Gary's other site. Our guest tonight, you can find him on libertyforum. You can find him also on RAM and a couple of other places. United States Militia.com as well. There's a few places you can find him. But his main one is, if anybody wants his email or contact information, get nothing, but he's more than happy to send it to you as well. Other than that, I'm out of here. You guys have a great night. Be safe. Be free. Please educate yourself and please be active. Can't do this alone. Thanks every single one of us out there. You guys be safe.